You are listening to AfterSight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the week of August 29th e-edition of the Douglas County News Press, Lone Tree Voice, and Castle Rock News, read by Kim Bowie Barnett. Today we will be reading the following main articles. Schools eyed for closures in 2026. Douglas County, quote, effectively, end quote, ends homelessness, but the data is nuanced. Residents urged to conserve water amid drought. And following up with miscellaneous articles. Schools Eyed for Closures in 2026 by McKenna Harford. Douglas County School District is firming up its timeline to consolidate elementary schools in Highlands Ranch as part of an effort to better serve both communities that are aging and those experiencing or expecting baby booms. No specific schools have been named for closure, but declining enrollment in the Highlands Ranch area has prompted the district to plan to merge elementary schools for the 2026 to 2027 school year. In 2012, elementary schools in Highlands Ranch had almost 10,500 students enrolled. In 2023, that number dropped to 7,409 students enrolled. Superintendent Aaron Kane laid out a timeline to close schools, with decisions about which ones to consolidate coming next spring. She said she expects that 6 schools will be merged into 3. The discussions around school pairings are all about opportunities for our kids and making sure that their opportunities are not defined by the communities in which they live, whether they're growing or declining, she said. The timeline includes the creation of a policy that will guide the consolidation process and set a rubric for closures. The policy is expected to be finalized next January, and then recommendations for consolidation will be made a few months later in April. There will be a gap year between when consolidations are announced and schools close to help families and staff navigate the transitions. We'll maintain a laser-like focus on our families and our staff and on taking care of them. But it will be hard for a community to do consolidations, Kane said. The district has promised that schools won't be split up and no impacted staff will lose jobs. It also plans to repurpose school buildings. Kane said declining enrollment at schools leads to a loss of opportunities for students, larger class sizes, and a less ideal learning environment. Large schools can provide students with more classes and extracurricular activities, offer teachers more collaboration, and support and expand programming for pre-K and special education students. Larger schools can easily hire more staff, and they have a lot more flexibility in terms of programming that they offer for kids, Kane said. Small schools are also not financially sustainable for the district, Kane said, and it costs around $2,500 more per student to finance a small school of fewer than 400 students compared to a larger school. We really don't have other long-term workable solutions, Kane said. If those buildings continue to get smaller and smaller, the loss of opportunity across the district will get larger and larger. The school board has been supportive of moving forward with Kane's plan. Douglas County, quote, effectively ends homelessness, but the data is nuanced, by Ellis Arnold. For nearly 2 years, an outreach team has traveled around Douglas County, contacting unhoused people, often more than once, to build trust and offer them help. Now, the county says it has, quote, effectively ended homelessness, end quote, attributing its success to the outreach program and other efforts. Officials are, quote, pleased to announce that we have functionally ended homelessness in Douglas County, end quote, said County Commissioner Abe Layden, noting that officials counted just 6 people sleeping outside in the county on one night this summer. This is about as close to functional zero as we're going to get. Earlier this year, a count found 80 homeless people, sheltered and unsheltered, in Douglas County. A fuller picture of homelessness data tells a more complicated story for a variety of reasons. The data cited by the commissioner comes from a point-in-time snapshot, a measure that can vary significantly year after year. In Douglas, where homeless numbers are often much lower than in other counties, the traditional metro area tally and Douglas's own summer data tell different stories. So too does the county's broader number of people who access services related to homelessness. Across the Denver area, homelessness doesn't show clear signs of going down, and by one indicator, it increased. This year's one-day count across 7 counties showed homelessness rising by 10% compared to last year, from about 9,100 to nearly 10,000, driven primarily by a 2% rise in shelter usage. While that's only a snapshot, a broader count of people accessing services or housing related to homelessness suggests that the region's homeless population could be closer to 30,000 over the course of the year, according to the Metro Denver Homeless Initiative. Behind every data point lies the reality of individuals and families facing the hardship of homelessness, Rebecca Mayer, interim director at MDHI, said in a statement. It's crucial to remember that our unhoused neighbors deserve the stability and security of a safe place to call home. Here's a closer look at the picture of homelessness in Douglas County and regional trends. Data Douglas touts. Each year, the Denver area, including Douglas County, participates in the point-in-time count of people experiencing homelessness, an effort that helps garner housing funds. The Metro Denver Initiative is mandated by the Federal Department of Housing and Urban Development, often called HUD, to organize the count in January, the initiative's website says. On the other hand, the data that Douglas County officials announced at an August 16th news conference, where Layden spoke, comes from a summer snapshot from July 29th that the county chose to carry out. Among the highlights in the county's summer data. Bullet 1, the number of people sleeping outside fell from 43 in 2022 to 6 in 2024. Bullet 2, counts showed a 50% reduction in those living in vehicles, 43 down to 21, and sleeping outside, 11 down to 6 since summer of 2023. People listed as unhoused but sheltered including those who spent the night in a motel paid by a nonprofit, a transitional housing unit, or domestic violence shelter, ticked up from 33 in the summer of 2022 to 42 this summer. Overall, this summer's total number of people counted was 69, down from 96 in summer of 2022. Because the raw number of unhoused people counted in the county is so low, large percentage changes can be common. And unhoused people, in some situations, are known to move around. Many of the folks we're encountering are transient. They're moving through Douglas County, Sheriff Darren Weekly said at the news conference. Rand Clark, Douglas's community services manager, said that the county's homelessness numbers can shift heavily. One family of four fluctuates our numbers, Clark said. Regional picture. Typically in January, teams from sources such as nonprofits and local governments in communities around the Denver area and areas around the nation conduct a point-in-time count. While the point-in-time count is valuable for assessing the scope of homelessness, raising public awareness, fostering regional collaboration, and informing data-driven strategies, it's essentially to note that it's essential to note that it's not the sole determinant of federal funding, said Kyla Moe, Deputy Director of the Metro Denver Initiative. Because the count generally takes place on a single night and can be affected by weather or other variables, the Metro Denver organization has discouraged looking at data trends year over year, although the count remains an often cited statistic. This year's count took place across Adams, Arapahoe, Boulder, Broomfield, Denver, Douglas, and Jefferson counties from sundown January 22nd to sundown January 23rd. The count showed just under 10,000 people experiencing homelessness, with about 6,500 in Denver and 80 in Douglas County. That's up from about 9,100 overall, with about 5,800 in Denver and 72 in Douglas in 2023. Parentheses, the newcomer population that stayed at temporary migrant-only shelters are not included in the Metro Denver Point in Time report, according to the organization. Quote, newcomers is a term that refers to migrant people. A broader count. Aside from the point in time, a broader count of homelessness comes from organizations that partner in what's called the Homeless Management Information System. About 80% of the homelessness services providers, about 80% of the homelessness service providers, such as nonprofits and other organizations that help the unhoused in the seven county metro area, use the system. Mo said, between July 1st, 2020 and June 30th, 2021, more than 32,000 people accessed services or housing support related to homelessness in the metro region, according to the Metro Denver organization. That number sat at about 28,000 people between July 1st, 2021 and June 30th, 2022. The number was about 30,400 between July 1st, 2022 and June 30th, 2023, Within that number, 182 people accessed services in Douglas County in that same period. Clark, the community services manager, said Douglas worked with 215 people through the HMIS in the first 6 months of this year. Not all people with housing needs stay in Douglas for long, Clark said. Some want to get through. Correction. Some, quote, want to get through town, get a car fixed, Clark said. What drives homelessness? The State of Homelessness 2023 to 2024 report from the Metro Denver Organization, a document that lists point-in-time numbers, says there are many causes of homelessness. Sometimes there is no singular cause, but rather several contributing factors, the report says. Our largest data source shows that the leading cause or contributing factor of homelessness is relationship problems or family breakups. When coupled with rising rents and low wages, it becomes increasingly difficult for people to secure stable housing in one of the most expensive metro areas in the country, the report says. Lack of support, domestic violence, employment challenges, and issues with mental health or substance use also contribute. Getting personal. Douglas County's Homeless Engagement Assistance and Resource Team, or HEART, the outreach group Layden lauded at the news conference, often gets personal with unhoused people. The really exciting news is that the HEART team knows them by name. These are not just numbers. They really make a point to get to know these individuals, Layden said. And despite the unclear trends in homelessness data in Douglas County, HEART has racked up success stories. If we encounter someone who is not interested in receiving services, we'll continue to engage. A lot of these individuals have trauma in their past history. It could be with law enforcement. Tiffany Marcito, who has served as a supervisor with HEART, said, explaining the team's interactions. Even if it's something little, like helping an individual get an ID, they feel empowered, she added. In the past, Marcito shared a HEART success story of a man who was panhandling. He said he had been homeless for more than 40 years. The man said he had some belongings stolen from him, Marcito said. The team was able to help him apply for food stamps assistance and health insurance right where he was, Marcito has said. During a follow-up meeting, the man said he had a potential job opportunity out of state. Greg Matthews, a HEART staffer, reached out to one of the team's faith-based partners, which purchased a Greyhound bus ticket to get the man to his destination. The faith-based partner also put him up in a hotel the night before he departed so he could have a warm place to stay and a shower so he could start his employment, Marcito has said. A veteran whom HEART worked with got housed within the last month or so, Clark said. HEART team members work with law enforcement, and the team began operations in mid-September 2022. To contact a member of HEART, the public can call 303-660-7301. Funding for Aurora Homeless Campus. Conversations about shelter in the county have been controversial. No dedicated shelters for the unhoused exist in Douglas County, aside from shelter space for domestic violence survivors, a county spokesperson said. But the county works to provide shelter through partnerships with churches and municipalities, including Aurora and Colorado Springs, and by providing motel or hotel vouchers, the spokesman said. Layden pointed to the county's effort to fund help in Aurora. Douglas has contributed about $1.1 million to the upcoming Aurora Regional Navigation Campus, a place that will serve the homeless, that will guarantee Douglas 5 beds with which to shelter unhoused people the county encounters. Along with shelter, the campus will offer, quote, wraparound services such as mental health counseling, help finding jobs, and help for those with substance use disorders, according to the county. Residents urged to conserve water amid drought. The recent record-breaking heat has taken its toll. Highlands Ranch is in a moderate drought, and with more high temperatures forecasted, the Centennial Water and Sanitation District is encouraging residents to be mindful of their water usage. The Water District, which serves the Highlands Ranch Metro District and the Mirabel Metropolitan District, determines water use decisions based on data from the U.S. Drought Monitor. According to the monitor, the region is experiencing moderate drought conditions. Some of the considerations that play into the report include precipitation, stream flow, reservoir levels, temperature and evaporative demand, solid moisture, and vegetation health, said Carrie Larice, Water District Communications Manager. In addition to the drought monitor, the Water District also takes into account daily demand for water and storage levels. The community's water supply comes from a combination of groundwater from 3 aquifers beneath Highlands Ranch and water from the South Platte River. The water is then stored in the South Platte, McClellan, and Chatfield reservoirs, allowing the district to pace out water throughout the summer. As of August 15th, the Water District's reservoirs were 79% full, according to Larice, and their demand from customers for August is an average of 24 million gallons per day. Strict water restrictions are not in place at this time, but conservation is being emphasized. We're in a strong position to meet customer demand, but the moderate drought conditions signal that we're in a hot, dry period, said Larice. This serves as a reminder for both us and our customers that conserving water is always crucial. Ways to conserve water include limiting outdoor watering of gardens and lawns to 2 days per week, avoiding using irrigation systems between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m., and hand watering trees and shrubs. Also, it helps to fix leaks and avoid situations where excess water flows into street gutters. The district also says keeping the community's water clean is important. People can help by cleaning up pet waste left on the ground so that it doesn't get washed into storm drains. The use of phosphorus-free fertilizers helps prevent algae blooms, which impacts water waste. Professional car washes ensure toxic chemicals are kept out of storm drains. EcoStar in, quote, constructive financial talks as it reports more losses, by Nina Joss. EcoStar Corporation, which merged with Dish Network earlier this year, reported an 8.8% year-over-year loss in revenue in its mid-year 2024 financial results. The company reported a total revenue of $7.97 billion for the 6 months ending June 30th, compared to $8.7 billion in the same period a year ago. The loss continues a trend for the company, which reported year-over-year losses at the end of 2023 and in its first quarter 2024 financial reports. The company, which is headquartered in unincorporated Douglas County, also has an office near downtown Littleton. Dish Network, a wholly owned subsidiary of EcoStar Corporation, has laid off more than 700 Colorado employees since November. In its second quarter, net pay TV subscribers decreased by approximately 104,000 compared to 294,000 in the year-ago quarter. The company closed the quarter with 8.07 million pay TV subscribers, including about 6 million Dish TV subscribers and 2 million Sling TV subscribers, according to the recent financial report. The quarter showed a decrease in net Dish TV subscriber losses due to a lower Dish TV churn rate, offset by lower gross new Dish TV subscriber activations, EchoStar stated in the report. The company reported a loss in its broadband net subscribers. In the report, EchoStar president and CEO Hamid Akhavan said the company focused this quarter on making improvements in our go-to-market approach for retail wireless. The company saw a small loss in its retail wireless subscribers this quarter, but noted that many of these were losses of government-subsidized subscribers, including affordable connectivity program subscribers. Excluding the impact of net losses of government-subsidized subscribers, EchoStar added approximately 32,000 retail wireless subscribers in the second quarter, the report states. Some economic analysts are predicting bankruptcy for the company, potentially by the end of the year. In the report, Akhavan said the company is in constructive discussions to address necessary financing. High Stakes: What It Takes to Perform a Mountain Rescue, by Chris Cobra. Colorado's mountains are nature's playgrounds. Tourists from all around the world and Colorado residents alike escape to the extreme terrain for skiing, hiking, climbing, biking, and more. But what happens when something goes wrong? Several specialized and highly trained mountain emergency response teams, many of them volunteers, constantly work and train together to be ready to perform a mountain rescue. Alpine Rescue, Central City Fire, Clear Creek EMS, Clear Creek Fire Authority, Flight for Life, and Evergreen Fire Rescue are a few of the agencies that respond when the worst happens in the unforgiving terrain west of Denver. As a group, they must be ready for anything, anywhere, anytime, and they are, according to field director for the Alpine Rescue Team, Herb Dorn. We love what we do. It's crazy. Almost half our members are probably tenured for over 20 years. So there's a deep love for what we do and the mission that we try to accomplish. And we're all volunteers, Dorn said, during a recent multi-jurisdictional exercise in Idaho Springs. Based in Evergreen, Alpine Rescue has been providing search and rescue to Gilpin, Jefferson, and Clear Creek County since 1959. Search and rescue is a very simplified term for what Alpine's 50 to 70 highly trained mountain rescuer volunteers are capable of accomplishing, according to its mission statement. According to the National Mountain Rescue Association, Alpine is one of 13 state agencies accredited in several rescue types, including technical rock, avalanche, technical rope, helicopter, and wilderness search. We do everything. We do avalanches. We do ski, 14ers. We help with swift water search and rescue. A little bit of everything. 15-year veteran volunteer Don Wilson said, after assisting in pulling a crash cart and live victim from a 500-foot ravine off Center City Parkway during training in Idaho Springs. At Wilson's side were several members of the Clear Creek Fire Authority and EMS who routinely train with Alpine and other agencies to draw on each other's specialties, capabilities, and equipment. In the moment, a cohesive response saves seconds and lives, according to CCFA Assistant Chief Jeremy Jones. We figure out what works and what doesn't in training so we can fix it so we don't experience those hiccups or delays when it's time critical, Jones said. On average, CCFA responds to more than 1,400 emergency calls from 8 fire stations throughout 347.5 square miles of Clear Creek County every year, with 55 volunteers, 16 full-time firefighters, and at least 4 seasonal wildland firefighters, according to department statistics. It serves the municipalities of Empire, Georgetown, Idaho Springs, Silver Plume, and the unincorporated lands of Clear Creek County. In a vehicle crash, fire, or rollover, CCFA members are first responders and assist EMS with preserving and saving lives. It has been providing swift water rescue for 51 years and was one of the first of its kind in Colorado, according to Jones. Life safety is our first priority. Victim life safety and your own. Clear Creek Training Captain Don Kugel said, Clear Creek Training Captain Don Kugel told a training crew in Dumont recently. CCFA covers the municipalities of Empire, Georgetown, Idaho Springs, and Silver Plume, and the unincorporated lands of Clear Creek County. Helicopters play crucial role. Bright orange and yellow Flight for Life helicopters are often seen at some of the most critical scenes where the helicopter, its onboard paramedic, and flight nurse can bring life-saving equipment and supplies to the backcountry or at altitude to effect rapid extrication, according to a parent company, Air Methods. The air crews often work and train side by side with other mountain rescue teams like CCFA and Alpine, according to flight nurse Libby Brewster. We participate in the trajectory of care in a different way. EMS or Alpine makes contact with the person initially. They call us, we participate in the transport, then they get to the hospital, Brewster said during a recent training exercise in Clear Creek County. We bring critical care to the patient. There's a lot of stuff we can do that maybe the ambulance can't, and we're also able to fly in a bunch of stuff, quote, equipment, so these guys don't have to hike in as much stuff. I mean, they're still going to because they like it, Flight for Life paramedic Jace Mullen said, laughing. Mullen and Brewster were standing side by side with at least 4 other rescue crews during a recent training exercise. No matter the agency, no matter the specific skill set, everyone has a common goal to protect life, Brewster said. When we have really, really sick patients and we're all able to take really great care of them and bring them an advanced level of care to the scene and start doing the things a hospital would do in the first 2 minutes, and the patient has a really good outcome, it's impactful, Brewster said. Relatively new to the combined effort approach to recovery rescue, the Clear Creek Sheriff's Department said new agreements with other agencies will change the way the department trains, and it expects to be working closely with Alpine Rescue. Recently, we've rewritten our policies and agreements with Alpine, EMS, and the Fire Authority. Before, they didn't really work all that well together and weren't on the same agreement. But now EMS has trained backcountry personnel that they can send in, and so we're all working a lot more cohesive than we did prior, Special Services Commander Seth Marquette said. The Sheriff's Department is in charge of overseeing all backcountry rescue operations, including avalanche search and rescue or injured hikers in the county, according to Seth Marquette. The sooner we can get on scene and get a team into the field, the better, because these rescues can last hours. Time is of the essence when they're in the backcountry, whether it's an avalanche or an injured hiker, whatever the case is, Marquette said. The changes in attitude toward multi-jurisdictional assistance and cooperation between agencies started when incoming Clear Creek County Sheriff Matt Harris took office in January, according to Marquette. Volunteers are critical to the success. Nearly every area emergency service relies heavily on trained volunteers, as most are manned with significantly more volunteers than paid staff, and Evergreen Fire Rescue is no exception, according to Evergreen Risk Reduction Coordinator Einar Jensen. Our volunteer firefighters live in Evergreen, Einar said. Evergreen Fire Rescue covers both Jefferson and Clear Creek counties and currently has only 75 of the 100 volunteers needed to run operations efficiently, according to Einar. When we talk about wanting more volunteer firefighters, we also need to make sure the people that are applying know that they will be trained and equipped at a professional level. They just won't be getting paid for it. That's the difference, Einar said. Volunteers in Evergreen receive 10 months of training and classroom work, largely on Mondays and Saturdays. After the successful end of training and state testing, the volunteer candidate will be certified as a level 1 firefighter in Colorado. We're asking you to put yourself at some risk to serve your community, and if that appeals to you, it's probably one of the most rewarding activities that you'll ever encounter, Einar said. We are always ready, Wilson said, about volunteering, and after a while, it becomes like a family. You just depend on each other. It's a difficult job to do and see. Rescuers say they see the worst of bad, but at times some good can make it worthwhile. It becomes taxing sometimes, but the worst of the worst, which is offset a little bit by seeing the good things in life, Jones said. Relying on and communicating with teammates or other rescue crews who experience and witness the same tragedies is critical for your own mental health, Jones said. There is a lot of effort on the part of responders to properly manage those images and experiences to avoid long-term PTSD issues. Most rescuers said there's an important reason to do this taxing, dangerous, and sometimes ugly job. They are there to help the injured, the same way they hope someone will be there for the people they love. Everybody goes into this field to help people you've never met in your entire life and maybe never see again. But we always hope if it's someone we love who is in danger or at risk, somebody will come help them, Jones concluded. Fairmount Cemetery to hold Forever Pet Fest by Haley Lena. Losing a family pet can be difficult, which is why Fairmount Funeral Home is holding its annual Forever Pet Fest for a second year in a row, in a way to help families grieve and honor their beloved dogs, cats, and other pets. The loss of an animal companion and pet family member is a very emotional time, said Karna O'Neill, manager of Fairmount Family Pet Loss Care. The free 3-hour event, starting at 9 a.m. on September 8th, will include food, dog boutiques, crafts, and a pet blessing. There will be double the amount of vendors in the Pet Fest compared with last year. The 30 vendors will have everything from treats to custom bow ties on display. O'Neill said the event is a way to bring the community together, as well as businesses that support the animal community. Along with a non-denominational blessing for pets, the event will also include a craft tent. We'll be doing paw prints on the dogs that come, and even cats that come, said O'Neill. Although Shelby, the Denver police's first therapy dog, can't be at the event due to her training, stuffed animals of her will be available. She's a support animal for kids, and they wanted to give the kids something to go home with, said O'Neill. Since Fairmount Funeral Home Cemetery and Crematory opened a pet loss care service last year, the funeral home has added several community partners, such as Positive Recovery, Pooch Cafe, and Buddy Scrub Pet. Another partner is Chewy's Boutique. Correction, is Chewy's Boneteak, a small local business that provides a variety of food products and toys. The funeral home also holds monthly pet walks where a pet can get a treat and take a walk with their owner around the cemetery. Fairmount provides pet cremation, personalized memorialization, pet loss grief support, and memorial ceremony options for pets ranging from ferrets to dogs. We're excited to be able to provide the service for the community and be able to now serve the entire family, said O'Neill. We'll be able to help you with your fur baby. The event will be held at 430 South Quebec Street, Denver. For more information, call 303-399-0032 or email at petlosscare@fairmountcemetery.net. Local Voices, Winning Words, Michael Norton. For many, this time of year signals the return to classrooms, the sharpening of pencils, and the eagerness accompanying new beginnings. Children and young adults from kindergarten to college embark on their education and journeys, their minds open and ready to absorb new information. But as we watch them head off to school, it's crucial to remember that learning is not just the domain of the young. Continuous learning is a lifetime journey. Continuous learning often gets pigeonholed as something required for professional development or career advancement, but this perspective is limiting. Learning isn't just about gaining new skills to improve our job performance or secure a promotion. It's about expanding our horizons, delving into intriguing subjects, and growing as individuals. It's about the joy of discovery, the thrill of mastering something new, and the satisfaction of pushing boundaries. Books, articles, and essays are windows into other worlds, offering perspectives that challenge our own and ideas that expand our thinking. Reading is a cornerstone of continuous learning, because it allows us to engage with the thoughts of others, both past and present. Whether diving into a novel, exploring a historical account, or dissecting a scientific paper, reading can ignite our imagination and deepen our understanding of the world around you. We inevitably face setbacks when we try something new, especially outside our comfort zone. We might make mistakes, encounter obstacles, or feel like giving up. But these moments are where the most profound learning occurs. A crucial part of continuous learning is the willingness to laugh at ourselves along the way. Learning isn't always a smooth process. It's often messy, frustrating, and humbling. But when we approach it with a sense of humor, recognizing that mistakes are a natural part of the journey, we make room for growth. As children head back to school this season, let's remember that their journey mirrors our own. Whether through reading, watching, or doing, and with a healthy dose of humor along the way, we can keep our minds sharp, our spirits curious, and our lives rich with the joy of discovery. I would love to hear your story at gotonorton@gmail.com. And when we embrace the opportunities to learn, both within our comfort zones and beyond them, knowing that each step forward is a step toward a fuller, more informed, and yes, a better than good and more fulfilling life. Michael Norton is an author, a personal and professional coach, consultant, trainer, encourager, and motivator of individuals and businesses working with organizations and associations across multiple industries. New girls flag football program arrives for Denver Area Youth League. Elementary through 8th grade girls can participate in Startup Effort by Ellis Arnold. Fresh off its recognition as an official sport for high school girls in Colorado, flag football is now on its way to girls in the elementary and middle school age groups in the Denver metro area through a youth sports league. This initiative aims to empower girls through sports, fostering a competitive yet supportive environment that will prepare them to play in high school now that girls flag football is a CHSAA sport, Mark Stank, president of the Castle Rock area Raptors Athletics, said in a statement. CHSAA is the Colorado High School School Activities Association. Years ago, Jeffco Public Schools, Denver Public Schools, and Cherry Creek School District started work to offer a pair of girls flag football pilot or startup seasons in 2022 and 2023, with the hope that the game would become an officially recognized sport, according to CHSAA. The goal became a reality after the CHSAA Legislative Council voted 57-9 in April to make girls flag football a sanctioned sport starting with the 2024-2025 school year. Now the sport is filtering down to a program for younger girls, the Arapahoe Youth League, an organization that covers students in Denver, many parts of Arapahoe, and Douglas counties, south of Jefferson suburbs, and Elbert County, is offering a free learn-to-play program for girls who want to participate in flag football. For this program, we will take everyone regardless of the location, said Craig Randall, president of Arapahoe Youth League. If sign-up numbers grow large, the organization will seek more field space. The program will run for 3 Sundays in September, with the ultimate goal of starting a recreational competitive league in fall of 2025, Randall said. The Learn to Play days will be open to girls from elementary through 8th grade, according to the Youth League website. The 3 days will be skills and drills, kind of like a football combine. And they could also include practice games, Stanky said. The program's location was still to be determined, but could take place in Highlands Ranch, Randall said. It's slated to run from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m., September 15th, 22nd, and 29th. Regular registration is open until September 10th, according to the website. See registration page at AYLFlagFootball-signup. Downtown merchants will be pouring wine for participants on September 13th, September 27th, and October 11th as the Downtown Parker Wine Walks return. Tickets can be obtained through registration in advance or purchased at the door. Admission is $25 in advance, $30 at the door. Pick up a collectible glass, map, and wristband at the Parker Chamber office at Parker Station, 19751 East Main Street, on the back side of Parker Station. Carpooling is recommended. The event was canceled last year amid legal concerns, prompting local lawmakers and business leaders to push for a new law that clears the way for such events across the state. Walk the Chalk Art Festival, Littleton's annual chalk art festival, is slated to take place on September 7th. Local artists will create masterpieces on the sidewalks of Main Street. Artists start at 8 a.m. Art stations will be set up on Main, Prince, and Alamo Streets for kids and the young at heart. ARC Thrift Stores have announced the opening of their newest store, which will be located at 7951 South Broadway in Littleton. The store's first Saturday 50% off sale will be August 31st from 8 a.m. to 9 p.m. SoSu Artist Collective. SoSu Artist Collective is hosting its five-year anniversary event at the Streets of South Glen on Saturday, September 7th from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. Celebrate with a cupcake, enjoy the art, and register for an art getaway. Englewood Public Library Fall Book Sale and Donations. The sale will take place on September 12th, 13th, and 14th. It is $5 a bag sale. Donations can be brought to the library during the regular business hours from September 3rd through September 7th. Waterworld goes to the dogs. Waterworld, Colorado's largest water park, is hosting its 7th annual Bow Wow Beach Doggy Day on September 7th. Dogs of all sizes are invited to splash, swim, fetch, and play in four of the park's signature attractions before Waterworld drains and cleans the pools for the winter. The annual event is organized in partnership with Adams County's Riverdale Animal Shelter, with a portion of the proceeds supporting the shelter. This year, the shelter is also collecting gently used blankets, towels, and washcloths at the entrance to the event. Each family who brings a donation will receive a free dog treat. Tickets are $9.99 per pup and can be purchased online. Dogs can choose from one of the three play sessions, 8:15 a.m., 10 a.m., and 11:45 a.m. To learn more and purchase tickets, visit www.waterworldcolorado.com. All pups must be 1 year of age, have a signed vaccination waiver, and be accompanied by a responsible adult owner. Thank you for joining us for the August 29th e-edition of the Douglas County News Press, Lone Tree Voice, and Castle Rock News, read by Kim Bowie Barnett.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.